Everybody. I am Jeff Darr, the president of the Los Angeles City Ethics Commission. Today is December 14, 2022. This is a special meeting at the Ethics Commission. In light of Government Code Section 54953E, the Governor's Executive Order Number N-21-21, and the Commission's determinations on November 16, 2022, this meeting is accessible by telephone. You may listen by calling 213-621-2489, 213-621-2489. You may also provide public comment today, which we welcome. All public comment will be taken during agenda item 2. To provide public comment, please call 669-254-5252. Once again, that number is 669-254-5252. You can also call a toll-free number for public comment. The number is 833-568-8864. The toll-free number again is 833-568-8864. You'll have to enter meeting ID 161-788-4780 followed by the pound sign. Once again, the meeting ID that you'll have to enter is 161-788-4780 followed by the pound sign. You'll then press the pound sign again when you're asked for a participant ID. So we're going to now turn to our agenda, and our first item on our agenda is our call to order. Before we proceed, I'm going to announce that Commissioner Laura Janot tendered her resignation earlier this week and unfortunately is no longer part of the Ethics Commission. We thank her very much for all of her years of dedicated service and active participation. And I just wanted to announce that before we did our roll call. So at this point, Eric Eusebio is going to be our meeting moderator. And Mr. Eusebio, would you please call the roll?
Thank you. Thank you, President Davis. Yes. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and here or present. President Darr?
Commissioner Darr is present.
Commissioner Davis?
Mr. Davis, present.
Vice President Kulkarni?
Commissioner Kulkarni, present.
And Commissioner LeBeau?
Commissioner LeBeau, present.
We have four commissioners present. We have a quorum. We may continue.
Thank you. So we're going to turn to item 2, which is our multiple agenda item public comment. And at this time, we're going to take all public comment on agenda items and general public comment. So both agenda items and general public. Let me make the following comment for everybody. We have received, I've received as commissioner for some time, comment about from the public on how we do our public comment. And you will see that there have been changes made for today's meeting as of the public comment from time to other things, including where to provide written comments. So this is a somewhat revised agenda item. So hopefully the public making public comment will make use of the revised part of this on our agenda. And with that, let me remind everyone, if you've called the public comment line, you're going to need to raise your hand to speak by pressing *9. So if you'd like to speak and you've called in, please raise your hand to speak by pressing *9. You will then be recognized by our meeting moderator when it's your turn to speak. And when you are recognized, please clearly state your name and which agenda item you want to comment on. And before we proceed further, one of the items that has changed in our multiple public agenda item is that the clock should be 3 minutes and not 2 minutes. So if we could have that changed before we proceed, thank you very much, Mr. Eusebio, or whoever did that. And with that, let's proceed with public comment today.
Caller, Caller ending in 404, you'll be prompted to unmute. Please state your name and the item numbers you'll be speaking on.
Hi, Jamie York. I also want to flag that I have a neighborhood council statement for when you get to item four for item 17, just so I don't get skipped on that. But I'm here to make general public comment and also speak on item 17, item 8, and item 18.
Great. Thank you. You may begin.
Okay. So for item 8, you know, I'm reading this through, and it's a real shame what happened to Jill Banks Broad. You know, she's the head of bank. I feel like Paparazzi took advantage of her, truly, in a lot of ways. But that's besides the point. I want to get at meet and greets. I think that the legislation or ordinance needs to be written to make it clearer. But it also really should include meet and greets incorporated in what we don't allow commissioners to be on flyers for, to host, to send invitations for. I've never been to a meet and greet that's not ending up to be a fundraiser, but I think especially in the last cycle with Caruso, where we saw someone who didn't necessarily have to raise money, I know of at least one commissioner who hosted a meet and greet for him, name on the invites, all that. I think that the ordinance needs to be clearer on that, and I really do think that it should include very specifically meet and greets as well, because that's kind of the way that you can sort of get around the rules that are meant for commissioners to not have them involved in political activity that way. So I'm really hoping that that is something that the commission will take up, because I think that that's a loophole. Then I want to get to item 17, the policy and legislation update. We're at 44 neighborhood councils now that have passed the MLO. So that's very exciting. And I think we're at 9 that have weighed in on Charter 700 reform, asking for pretty significant amendments to the Charter 700 reform. It was really disturbing at the neighborhood council level to see that the Charter 700 stuff had been waived from committee, when clearly this is a topic that really needs robust discussion and talk. So, you know, I'm really, really proud of the work that neighborhood councils have put in when it comes to government reform, because it's a winner for all of us, and it's something that I think we're built to care about. Then I want to talk about item 18. I was looking through the cured contributions for Nuri Martinez, and I'm sitting there and I'm wondering, how do you not notice contributions that are coming in within days of each other that take you over the limit? Like, is someone asleep at the wheel, just not paying attention? That should have been immediately cured. It shouldn't have had to come to the Ethics Commission. That should have been a self-cure by her fundraising staff, by her. Like, if you're paying attention, that's something that you would immediately flag. So just kind of interesting, but also really interesting that one of the aggregated contributions was for this Smart Ike mobile thing. That's been something that's been really contentious within neighborhood council world. So, yep, just flagging that.
Thank you, Ms. York. I've been instructed to let you know that you may say your impact statement now at this moment, and you will have the time you need.
Okay, so give me one moment to pull it up.
Sure. Your public comment has expired, but you may say your impact statement now.
Okay, great. So this is a community impact statement that we filed on both Council File 22-1232 and to the Ethics Commission. Our position is support if amended. The Reseda Neighborhood Council supports the recommended changes to the charter if amended. Our City Ethics Commission was a model for the nation when it was created over 3 decades ago, and an update is long overdue. We urge the city to do the work necessary to finalize the proposal for a future ballot. However, rushing this work and waving it out of committee is patently unacceptable as an answer to the ever-evolving scandal at City Hall. This work cannot be done as an election stunt or for good press. It deserves a full and fair hearing in committee with a robust discussion. The Ethics Commission recommendations would largely reflect input received on how to empower the body to enforce the law, meaningfully change policy, and would change power dynamics at City Hall. However, they fail to equally enhance the independence of the commission. This could give rise to elected officials strong-arming commissioners and meddling with enforcement actions and policy proposals they carry out. We recommend the following specific amendments. 1, independent appointment. The City of LA will not have a truly independent ethics commission until it ends the involvement of elected officials in the appointment process. The incumbent commissioner should be responsible for accepting and vetting applications through a public process like Oakland and Long Beach Ethics Commission. Eligibility requirements. The commission proposes adding restrictions excluding any bidder, contractor, developer, or someone with a direct financial interest in the work of the city from the service on the commission. These restrictions are warranted but incomplete. We also recommend excluding anyone who is a recent candidate for the City of LA, former elected officials in the City of LA, and anyone who has donated or raised above a certain threshold for local candidates. 3, raise the vote threshold for removal of a commissioner. The commission recommends increasing the number of elected officials who may initiate removal and reducing the threshold to a majority vote. We recommend requiring a two-thirds vote for all removal proceedings of the ethics commissioners. 4, increased maximum penalty. The commission recommends increasing the maximum administrative penalty to $10,000 per violation. We recommend adopting Chicago's max penalty of $20,000 per violation model. And 5, raise the minimum budget. The commission recommends their budget be set at $4.5 million and tied to the Consumer Price Index. While this would protect against retaliation or defunding during a financial crunch, it also essentially freezes the status quo into the charter. $4.5 million, that's only a few hundred thousand above the commission's current budget. The recommendations also include new expenditures like outside counsel, which will require more money. If the city council is expanded, ethics will require more money. A minimum budget in the range of $7 to $10 million would give the commission the resources needed to fulfill its broad, sweeping mandate. These reforms would ensure that the commission is sufficiently independent enough to be entrusted with the expanded power offered. Thank you for your consideration of this topic, Reseda Neighborhood Council, and this item was passed on November 14th, 2022. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is Commissioner Darb. One quick comment. First, I know that that was already in the council file, so thank you very much and appreciate you bringing it up at our meeting today. I will note that my understanding, and I'm not on the city council, of course, is that the motion regarding the charter amendments as to the Independent Ethics Commission, those are not now waived out of committee. And I can't speak more than that because I'm not the one who sets city council agendas, but I understand that the initial waiver of having it go to committee was changed some time ago. So there should be a hearing, at least we hope, on our side. But that's what we anticipate and what we understand is happening. More public comment.
Thank you. Caller ending in 208, you'll be prompted to unmute. Please state your name for the record and the items you'll be speaking on.
Hi, it's Rob Kwan. I'd like to speak on items 5 through 19 and general public comment.
Thank you. You may begin.
How much time do I have?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. I'm getting flashbacks to Nuri Martinez chairing meetings right now. I will do my best with that. On number 8, this Corrette's Roof fundraiser, glad to see that this is getting addressed and addressed quickly. Important to note that this fundraiser occurred after the LA Times wrote a story about Councilmember Price hosting a fundraiser with a bunch of redistricting commissioners on the advertisement. So everybody should have been on notice. I would just say that it's really unfortunate because our commissioners are like volunteering their time and have a lot on their plate, and we've got complicated ethics rules. They don't have Kauffman Legal on retainer. It should really be on the elected official when they're the ones putting out invites with people's names on them. So I just think it's unfortunate that the commissioner is the only one that's being put in the spotlight. Item 19, our matching funds trust fund rested at about $19 million before we made changes to the matching funds program back in 2019. The citywide are way more expensive and draining on the fund, so it's good to see that after weathering this recent cycle, we are sitting at over $16 million right now. Item 13, the election update. I just want to thank the commission for all of those revisions proposed to the matching funds trust fund or the program. You know, one of the things we said we wanted to do was encourage more women to run for office because in the city of LA, they win just as much as men do, but make up only 20% of the candidates. And now, since those reforms, we have three times the number of women on city council. 42% of the candidates in the CD6 special right now are women. So it's not 50% where we want to see it or more, but that's definitely an improvement from 20%. For the policy update, I just want to say that, you know, the ethics charter reforms have been untouched by council since they were introduced via motion 2 months ago. 1 month more will go by with this recess, and then council will have to navigate a half-baked proposal. I don't know, but I would have spent that time maybe revisiting this as an ethics commission with everything that's going on with this city. Clearly, they had a bunch of lame ducks on the council and didn't want to take it up. But time is of the essence, and it's really tough explaining this proposal to council staff when there are a laundry list of details that are left unexplained. So for item 18 in the ED report, I just want to also echo the laughs about Nuri Martinez's cured contributions. Aggregate contributions can be tough and complicated, but we've got a bunch of cumulative contributions from the same donor within days of each other. This is just kind of the culture that exists out there, where, you know, you can file as you please now and clean it up later. And this does not just apply to cured contributions. I want to note that in proportion to the amount she raised, this is about like nearly 5% of her fundraising, just the excess contributions, not just all of them involved. So this is kind of pretty abnormal. And for the CFO updates on general public comment, I just want to say that you previously indicated that Cruz via FEC was something you wanted to revisit to ensure greater transparency and disclosure. I know that the FEC, you know, waiver of those limits has been pushed through on council. I hope you actually follow up on that. And I also want to say the BAS inauguration, we have no info on donors and spending. And those are behested payments going to the mayor's fund. So I just think this is something where that also needs to be evaluated because we're having less transparency than we did in 2013 when Eric Garcetti took office.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kwan.
Caller ending in 985, you'll be prompted to unmute. Please state your name and the item you'll be speaking on.
Yes, is the beep the end of the 3 minutes or is that a warning?
That is the end of the 3 minutes.
Okay. General comment number 8, number 11, number 13, 17, 18.
Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. My name is...
Can we get your name if you don't mind, just so we know who's talking about?
Yes. My name is Glenn Bailey. I'm president of the Northridge East Neighborhood Council. We have filed a community impact statement previously, but I'm speaking as an individual today. First of all, I do want to acknowledge and thank the commission for changing the wording on public comment. Also, since the last time I called in, I don't believe there was a toll-free number offered, so thank you for doing that. That's very helpful. With regards to item number, first of all, and also let me just acknowledge publicly, Jamie York is the spark plug to get those 44 neighborhood councils and growing, you know, engaged with issues that relate to improving the ethics in the city of LA. So just a public acknowledgement of Jimmy York's leadership in that. I did want to comment specifically on number 8 regarding Jill Banks Barad. I have known Jill in the context of her leadership in the community for with neighborhood councils. Being the founder and chair of the Valley Alliance of Neighborhood Councils. She was chair of the Sherman Oaks Neighborhood Councils for many years, and of course, more recently, a commissioner on the Department of Water and Power. Before she was a commissioner, she hosted fundraising events for candidates, not just city level, but you know, other levels of government. And all of that's not to excuse the city's ethics rules, but I do want to make a couple points. First of all, before COVID and before either of these fundraisers in question, she suffered a massive stroke and was recovering from that. And my point is that while that doesn't excuse, you know, not complying with the ethics rules, I think that the Rue and the Koretz campaigns knew that situation. They and their professional fundraisers know what the laws are. Koretz was a member of city council at that time for 12 years and a member of the state legislature before that. So I strongly recommend, while there definitely should be a message to commissioners to follow the law, and more importantly in my mind, is that these city elected officials, incumbent city council members and their professional fundraising people that they hire to raise the money, they should be held accountable, and they should be held accountable to the maximum extent of the law. They knew better. They knew better. And there was no reference in your report, which I've read, to the news reports that happened, which they admitted in the news reports. The Koretz campaign admitted in the news reports that they were the ones that initiated and placed this fundraiser at the home of Jill Banks Barad. This commission needs to hold that elected official and the professional fundraisers accountable for the violations that have occurred, and maybe there's others. Maybe you should look into that as well. But definitely in these two documented cases, and definitely for the Koretz case, which is documented in the news media, that campaign and that former elected official needs to be held accountable. My time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Thank you. President Dar, we do not have any further public comments. No other hands are raised.
Okay. Just to be sure, let's give one more minute. If anyone else wants to provide public comment at today's meeting, you do need to raise your hand. The procedure, again, is you have to call in and then press *9. If we have nobody in another 45 seconds or so, we will continue with our agenda.
I have one hand raised, President Dar. Caller ending in 090. Please state your name for the record and the items you'll be speaking on. You'll be prompted to unmute.
Hi there. Good afternoon, commissioners. This is Brian Silvera from Brian Silvera and Associates. My lobbying activities are the subject of item number 6. I'm wondering if this is the correct time to speak or if I would have an opportunity later.
Now would be the time, so please proceed. And we're going to keep rigid to the clock, but let's restart the clock since you really haven't had a chance to provide any actual comment. But thank you, and please proceed. We understand that you're addressing item 6 on our agenda.
Okay, thank you very much. And I won't need much time at all. Really, all I wanted to say is that, well, I wanted to apologize to this commission that you've had to use your time and resources educating me on ethics law. But before I was contacted by ethics staff, I was not even aware that my work activities qualified as lobbying, but I should have been aware. So I violated that law, and I'm very embarrassed about that. And I would just like to move on with this. And again, I apologize to the commission and for using staff resources and taxpayer money. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's pause and give another 1 minute, Mr. Eusebio, to make sure that no one else wants to provide public comment. Again, if you want to provide public comment, you need to dial and now raise your hand by pressing *9 on your device. Am I correct that we have no one else requesting to provide public comment, period, during public comment period right now?
President Dar, there are no hands raised.
Okay, I think we've had more than a minute go by. So this will conclude our public comment period for today. Thank you, everyone, who spoke. We appreciate the public comments. And again, a reminder, it's on the agenda. We strongly encourage everyone to provide public comment by also, by not only appearing like people have today, but also in addition or separately to submit written comments to ethics.commission@lacity.org, ethics.commission@lacity.org, and ideally 24 hours prior to the meeting so that commissioners will have time to receive and review them. With that in mind, let's turn to item three on our agenda. Item three is approval of minutes for two meetings, meeting on October 19 and meeting on November 16, 2022. And at this point, let me ask the commissioners if there's a motion with regard to the 2 minutes.
Commissioner LeBeau here. I will make a motion to approve both minutes.
Very good. Commissioner LeBeau moves to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
I second.
Commissioner Kulkarni seconds. Thank you. Is there any need for discussion? Hearing none being requested, let's proceed to a vote. Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll on the motion to approve the two sets of minutes?
Yes. This vote is on the motion to approve the minutes for the meetings on October 19, 2022 and November 16, 2022. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar.
Commissioner Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni.
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau.
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have four yeses. The motion is approved.
Thank you, everyone. Let's turn to item four on our agenda, possible discussion with authorized neighborhood council representatives. We already heard from Ms. York on behalf of, I believe it's the Receded Neighborhood Council. Do we have any other authorized neighborhood council representatives today for this agenda item?
President Dart, we have not received any other community impact statements.
Very good. Hearing nobody wanting to discuss with us any resolutions or community impact statements, we will then conclude item four. And we are now going to turn to our first of our number of action items today, which are numbers 5 through 11. Number five is our first proposed stipulation in case number 2022-033 in the matter of Lasker Freeman. This is an alleged misuse of city position matter. I'd like to ask Ken Hardy, our director of enforcement, to please present this item to everybody. And welcome. Good to see you, Mr. Hardy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, President Doran, members of the commission. Sabrina Gonzalez was the investigator in this case. Unfortunately, can't attend today because of a personal matter. The governmental ethics ordinance prohibits city officials from using their position to create a benefit or a disadvantage to themselves or to any other person. Here we have two violations of that provision. Mr. Freeman was employed by the Department of Transportation as a traffic officer too. At the same time, he was working as a truck driver for his family business. Mr. Freeman did not obtain approval to engage in outside employment as required by his department. There's also evidence that Mr. Freeman claimed and received paid sick leave on multiple occasions. During this time, Mr. Freeman was not personally sick, nor did he attend to the illness or injury of a family member. Instead, while he was on these various paid leaves, he was working his truck driver position. Enforcement staff notes that Mr. Freeman cooperated with us at an early stage and therefore saved the commission resources. Mr. Freeman also has no prior enforcement history with the Ethics Commission. Based on the specific facts in this case, staff recommends resolving this matter by imposing a penalty of $5,000. The recommended penalty is intended to promote the equitable treatment of similar respondents, encourage the early resolution of violations, and it also reflects the serious nature of the violation. That concludes my presentation. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. Do any of my fellow commissioners have any questions? Any questions? Hearing none being requested, let me ask if there's a motion on this item.
Commissioner Davis moves to accept the proposed stipulation.
Commissioner Davis moves to approve the stipulation. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, Commissioner Kulkarni seconds the motion. Any discussion? Hearing none being requested, Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll for a vote on the motion to approve this stipulation?
Yes. This vote is on the motion to approve the proposed stipulation in case number 2022-033 in the matter of Lasker Freeman. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar?
Commissioner Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Commissioner Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni?
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau?
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have 4 yes votes and the motion is approved.
Thank you. We're going to now turn to item 6 on our agenda today, which is the proposed stipulation in case number 2022-030 in the matter of Brian Silvera and Brian Silvera and Associates. Mr. Hardy, would you please present item 6 for us?
Yes, thank you. Maricel Aguayo is the investigator in this matter. Mr. Silvera is the owner and only employee of Brian Silvera and Associates. This is a full service land use and development consulting firm based on Mr. Silvera's and his firm's lobbying activities and direct communications. He qualified as a lobbyist and his firm qualified as a lobbying firm. Neither Mr. Silvera nor his firm were registered as lobbying entities at the time. However, once enforcement staff notified him of his lack of compliance, he immediately took steps to retroactively register as well as file the quarterly reports for the period of time in question. Enforcement staff notes the following mitigating circumstances. Mr. Silvera cooperated with staff and saved Ethics Commission resources by entering into the stipulated settlement as early at a very early stage. And I should note that Mr. Silvera is probably one of the most cooperative respondents I've dealt with, at least in my tenure here. He's the individual who spoke earlier at public comment. Mr. Silvera, as I stated before, has fully complied after we notified him of the lack of compliance. And there's also no evidence of any prior enforcement history with the Ethics Commission with Mr. Silvera, and there's no evidence of a deliberate violation in this matter. Based on the specific facts and mitigating circumstances in this case, a staff recommends resolving this case by imposing a $20,000 penalty. The recommended penalty is intended to promote the equitable treatment of similar respondents, encourage early resolution of cases, and reflects the serious nature of the violations in question here. That concludes my presentation, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you again, Mr. Hardy. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
President Dar, I would just echo Mr. Hardy's recognition of Mr. Silvera's mea culpa. We've been doing this a while, and I am hard-pressed to think back to someone showing up and taking ownership for their actions. I'm sorry for the situation he finds himself in, but I did want to recognize his ownership of the issue and give my appreciation for that.
Thank you, Commissioner Davis. Any other commissioners? Hearing no other questions at this time, is there a motion on this item?
Move to accept the proposed stipulation.
Okay, Commissioner Davis moves to approve the stipulation. Do we have a second on that motion?
Commissioner LeBeau, I will move to second.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner LeBeau seconds the motion. Any discussion on the motion before we proceed to a vote? Hearing no request for discussion. Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll for the vote on the motion to approve the stipulation?
Yes. This vote is on the motion to approve the proposed stipulation in case number 2022-030 in the matter of Brian Silvera and Brian Silvera and Associates. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar.
Commissioner Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Commissioner Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni.
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau.
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have four yes votes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. And let's turn to item 7 on our agenda. It is a proposed stipulation in case number 2022-017 in the matter of Brian Candy and KBS Holdco LLC, DBA Regency Outdoor Advertising. Mr. Hardy, can you please present item number 7 for us?
Yes, thank you, President Dar. Dina Wabo is the investigator in this case. Brian Kennedy is the CEO of what's commonly known as Regency Outdoor Advertising. In summary, Mr. Kennedy and Regency acknowledged that they put up a billboard in support of a candidate for city attorney without the proper disclaimer and, in fact, misattributed the advertisement to the candidate himself. After being contacted by enforcement staff, a Regency did remove the billboard, and they have subsequently reported the independent expenditure communication to our office. They have amended the disclaimer so it's properly identified as coming from Regency and not the candidate itself, and they have provided a copy of the communication itself with us. In this settlement, we have three counts. The counts reflect the improper disclaimer, the failure to report the expenditure as an independent expenditure in the first place, and account for failing to provide the Ethics Commission with a copy of the communication itself, which would be with the billboard itself, or a facsimile of the billboard itself. In considering this penalty, we note that Kennedy and Regency cooperated with staff and saved us resources by settling at an early stage in this process. However, enforcement staff also notes the following aggravating circumstances. Regency has prior enforcement history with Ethics Commission in a fairly similar matter, and the violation in this case does appear to be deliberate, and of course the violation in this case is serious. Based on the specific facts and aggravating circumstances in this case, we do recommend that this matter be resolved by imposing a $19,000 penalty as set forth in the draft exhibit and stipulation. That concludes my presentation, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, and the recommendation was stipulated to by the respondent in this case, correct? So
That is correct.
Okay, any of the commissioners have any questions? Hearing no questions, may I call for a motion on this item?
Commissioner Kulkarni, I'd like to make a motion to approve the stipulation.
Thank you. Commissioner Kulkarni moves to approve the stipulation. Is there a second on that motion?
Commissioner LeBeau, I will make a second motion on that stipulation.
Okay, I take that, Commissioner LeBeau, as a second of the motion. Yes? Okay, so Commissioner LeBeau seconds the motion. Any requests for discussion on the motion? Hearing none, Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll for a vote on the motion to approve the stipulation, item 7?
Yes, this vote is on the motion to approve the proposed stipulation in case number 2022-017 in the matter of Brian Kennedy and KBS Holdco, LLC, DBA, Regency Outdoor Advertising. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar?
Commissioner Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Commissioner Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni?
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau?
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have 4 yes votes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. We're now going to turn to item 8 on our agenda, which is our final stipulation for the day. This is proposed stipulation in case number 2022-001 in the matter of Joe Banks Broad Hopkins. Mr. Hardy, please present on this item today for us.
Thank you, President Dar. Sabrina Gonzalez was the investigator in this case. So the campaign finance ordinance prohibits a member of a city board or commission who is required to file a statement of economic interests, commonly known as a Form 700, from engaging in prohibited fundraising activities on behalf of an elected city officer or a candidate for elected city office or a city-controlled committee. Ms. Berard Hopkins was appointed to the Los Angeles Board of Water and Power Commissioners in September of 13. And she was required to file a Form 700. Ms. Berard Hopkins engaged in prohibited fundraising twice as set forth in greater detail in the exhibit to the stipulation. Once in 2020 with respect to David Rue and once in 2021 with respect to Paul Koretz. Enforcement staff notes the following mitigating circumstances. Ms. Berard Hopkins cooperated with staff and saved Ethics Commission resources by entering into the stipulated settlement at an early stage. I note that she was very cooperative right from the beginning in trying to resolve this matter quickly, and we appreciate that. Staff found no evidence of an intent to conceal, and Ms. Berard Hopkins has no prior enforcement history with the Ethics Commission in this type of particular matter. That concludes my presentation, and I will be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
Yes, President Dar. Mr. Hardy, not necessarily talking about the case against Broad Hopkins, but to the public comments that were expressed earlier, is there any responsibility in the law for the campaigns or the candidates for use of the commissioners? Obviously, we're all commissioners. We signed the agreement. We know we're not supposed to do fundraising. I'm wondering what the candidate, if there's some equal responsibility or some other responsibility that is imposed. Not asking you, obviously, to talk about any ongoing investigations you may have in this particular matter, but could you talk to what the law is for the campaigns and candidates that actually engage with commissioners?
Yes, Commissioner Davis, and no, I appreciate you asking me not to ask about the specifics of any pending investigation. I would prefer not to discuss interpretations of law probably in this type of venue, you know, unless it was, you know, an actually active case. I can say that just as a procedural matter, if there are related cases or related violators in a particular matter, just in general, procedurally speaking, sometimes they're included in the same case number, sometimes they are not, and even if they're handled under different case numbers, they may or may not be resolved at the same meeting at which a settlement takes place. So just procedurally speaking, that's, you know, kind of the big picture. With our matters, even if there are multiple parties involved. And I hope that answers your question. I know you're asking.
It is an answer. I appreciate that, Mr. Hardy.
I know you're asking for a little more specific question about candidates, and I would say we would have to review that on a case-by-case basis and look specifically at the facts. And certainly look at the provisions in question.
Thank you, Mr. Hardy.
Commissioner Davis, I would generally add that we do have provisions that speak to aiding and abetting in our law. And again, if appropriate, if applicable, if given the facts of cases, we look to any of avenues when we're looking at specific issues.
Thank you both.
Any other questions or follow-up? Hearing none at this time, may I call for a motion on item 8?
I'll move to accept the proposed stipulation.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Davis moves to approve the stipulation. Is there a second on the motion?
I submit a second.
Well, Commissioner Kulkarni seconds the motion. Any discussion on the motion before we proceed to a roll call? Hearing no discussion being requested, Mr. Eusebio, could you please call the roll for a vote to approve the stipulation item number 8?
Yes. This vote is on the motion to approve the proposed stipulation in case number 2022-001 in the matter of Jill Banks Barad Hopkins. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar.
Commissioner Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Commissioner Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni.
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau.
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have 4 yes votes. The motion is approved.
Thank you. Let's then turn to our next action item, item 9 on our agenda today. This is an important one. It's the assessment of matching funds in the trust fund for the 2023 special election for Council District 6, where we have a lot of people filing intents. So if we are to have a determination regarding the matching fund balance, we're going to hear from Ms. Damakovich, our Director of Audits, and could you please present item 9 for us today? Welcome and thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Ilya Danielkevich, and I'm the Director of Audits. Item 9 is an action item regarding the Matching Funds Program. The Matching Funds Program provides limited public funding to help qualified city candidates campaign for elected office. The program is funded by annual appropriations to a trust fund. For every city election, the Ethics Commission must determine whether there is enough money in the trust fund to provide maximum matching funds to each qualified participant. The maximum amount of matching funds available to a qualified candidate in the special CD6 election is $174,000 in the primary and $217,000 in the general. At the time the memo in your binder was drafted, filing week for the special election had not been completed. That being said, after filing week ended, we had 19 individuals file fundraising paperwork in this election cycle. Of those, 17 or 89% agreed to participate in the matching funds program. To receive public funding, candidates must meet a number of qualification criteria, including being certified to appear on the ballot. Assuming that all 17 participating candidates appear on the ballot and receive maximum funding, total payments in the primary election will be $2,958,000. If candidates then advance to the general election and both receive maximum funding, total payments in the general election will be $434,000. Therefore, the most that would be paid out in matching funds for the entire election cycle is $3,392,000, which is less than the $18.2 million that we will have available to candidates during the 2023 special election. Therefore, the staff recommends adopting resolution in attachment A to certify that the maximum funding is available for each qualified candidate in the 2023 primary and general elections. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to provide any additional information or answers to questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from any of the commissioners? Hearing no questions at this time, let's proceed to calling for a motion. So if there's a recommended action of adopting the resolution in attachment A to certify that maximum funding is available to qualified candidates in the primary and general elections for the special election in CD6. Is there a motion one way or another on this item?
I make the motion to adopt the resolution as stated.
Thank you. Commissioner Kulkarni moves to adopt the resolution. Is there a second on that motion?
Commissioner LeBeau, I will second that motion to adopt the resolution.
Okay, Commissioner LeBeau seconds the motion. Any discussion of the motion before we proceed to a roll call? Hearing none being requested, Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll for a vote on the motion to adopt the resolution attachment A to certify that maximum funding is available?
Yes, this vote is on the motion to adopt the resolution in attachment A to certify that maximum funding is available to qualified candidates in the primary and general elections. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar?
Mr. Dar, yes.
Commissioner Davis?
Commissioner Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni?
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau?
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have 4 yes votes. The motion is approved.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's turn to item 10 under action items. This is the 2023 regular meeting schedule. We wanted to have the commission at the, you know, before 2023 starts, just review and discuss and hopefully set the schedule for 2023 for our regular meetings. And so we have a report with proposed meeting dates. I will note they're proposed meeting dates. But we have had extensive discussion, in particular the past year, over what day and what time best works with the public in the context of other meetings of other governmental entities, city and county, and potentially other meetings. And we have come up with noon, and we've come up with a regular meeting date during the month. But that's what we came up with based on the, you know, recent past experience of for many months thinking about this, hearing public comment and proceeding. So at this time, with that in mind, let me turn to our executive director, Mr. Tristan, and have him further present on this item.
Thank you, President Dar. Really, there isn't much to add. I think you covered everything. That makes it very easy for me. As you mentioned, this is would continue the practice that we currently have in place for next year. If needed, we would add any special meetings to this calendar with plenty of notice to the public. If these dates work, then we recommend adopting the resolution in Attachment A.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions?
I have a question. So in adopting this schedule, are we planning to continue doing them virtually, or are we moving to meet in person, or is that a separate order of business?
So excellent question, Commissioner Kulkarni. You will note that item 11 is our action item on potential recommendation to continue virtually for the next meeting. So for purposes of answering your question, we can discuss the issue of virtual, in person, or any other context of a meeting schedule in the next action item. So today's action item 10, I would ask everyone to keep to what's agendized, which is just setting our regular meeting dates for 2023 so we have them scheduled. Obviously, things may happen where we will move hearing dates, but this way, everyone on our, you know, commissioners, staff, and the public at least has on calendar, to the extent they want to calendar these things, our meeting dates, and we can work from them. And we'll take the issue of where, when, and how the meeting takes place as partly for our next action item and as we go forward to the future in 2023. Does that work for everyone? Okay. So with that, any other questions with regard to our proposed meeting dates for 2023?
And sorry, let me just clarify. I think for me, the schedule issue depends on, in part, on whether it's in person or not for at least the first meeting. So wanted to just share that's why where my question came from.
Well, it'll should work out well, because our next action item, number 11, will be to discuss virtual or not for the next meeting.
President Dar, is there a way that we can adopt these, and then if there is an issue for a particular commissioner, if and when we should move to in person, then we adjust as needed?
Well, as you will notice and have noticed, we do need to make findings for each meeting that we have if we're going to not be in person, and we have not had any in person since the pandemic, essentially. So the answer is yes. My understanding, somebody can fill in on staff if they think it's will be helpful in any way. But each time we will have a meeting, we will beforehand review whether it's going to be virtual, since we need to make special findings to have a non-in-person meeting. Everyone agree with what I said, hopefully?
Mr. President?
Yes.
It's Renee. Just to add, if at some point it becomes more clear that we'll be returning to in-person meetings on a more regular basis, then the commission could potentially, if you desire, to look at the meeting schedule again as a whole and adjust if you want.
Yeah, the schedule is one that will just set the dates. It's not in stone. And things may happen where we need special meetings, or we may need to change meeting dates, and we can't predict the whole next year, but at least we'll have dates in place, and we'll, you know, move from there. But the dates can be changed as we need. And, of course, the issue of in-person virtual is something that, you know, since my time in the commission, we've not met in person yet. So I understand. When we don't know what next month, February, we don't know where we're going to be, including where City Hall will be, what the city's permitting, and not to get too much into the next item at all, but also what infrastructure the city may offer so that we can have a hybrid if we wanted, where the public doesn't have to attend in person. But we'll get to that in item 11 in a moment. Anything else, questions or discussion on the proposed meeting schedule? Again, not in stone, but I think it'll be very beneficial for all of us to at least have a schedule for the year, including staff, council, and the public. Okay, if there's no further questions at this time, may I call for a motion regarding the proposed meeting dates?
Commissioner LeBeau, I will make a motion to adopt the proposed meeting dates for 2023.
Okay, and that's just for clarity. It's resolution in attachment A to this item. So thank you. Commissioner LeBeau moves to adopt the item A, attachment A resolution. Is there a second on that motion?
I'd like to second.
Thank you. Commissioner Kulkarni seconds the motion. At this time, any further discussion?
Commissioner LeBeau, not discussion, but just at some point in December, to the staff, David, would you mind just sending us calendar invites for those? Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none being requested, Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll on the motion to adopt the proposed meeting schedule set forth in resolution attachment in attachment A?
Yes, this vote is on the motion to adopt the regular meeting schedule for 2023 on the resolution in attachment A. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Dar.
Commissioner, yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes.
Vice President Kulkarni.
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau.
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have 4 yes votes and the motion is approved.
Great, thank you. So we're now going to turn to item 11, which is our last of our action items today. This is the one that addresses findings that we would need to make if we want to have our next meeting virtual. And so on this item, since I know there's going to be some discussion, I anticipate, let me just state that the agenda identifies the recommended determination if we want to be virtual. My understanding, and we can have staff confirm this, is that at the moment for city council committees and commission meetings that have for commissions that have met in City Hall, which is my understanding of where we previously met pre-pandemic. This is standard at the moment. I will note that I know that there are commissions that are meeting in person, but they have their own independent hearing rooms. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, such as the airport, such as the harbor commissions. And so for that, with everyone looking at what findings we would need to make, if we want to make them today, let me open this up for discussion. I believe we have requests for discussion on this item. And by the way, anyone else want to set the framework before we have discussion? In particular, somebody asked, Mr. Tristan, is there anything else you want to comment or add, or information that you have that's current or more recent?
President Darno, just to echo your statement that as our recent look at the commissions that were holding in-person meetings, it was the ones that work outside of City Hall and have their own facilities. In City Hall, that is the Board of Public Works that has their own room and is able to accommodate variations of in-person and public comment via phone call. That's to the extent that we know. And we typically have our meetings on the 10th floor, which currently do not have an option for call-in comments by the public. So that issue has still not been addressed. Obviously, we don't have the control of what technology is available in those rooms. So those would be the only additional information that I could provide. There was a motion that I saw that Councilmember Koretz made as part, one of the various motions he made related to requesting, I believe it was the personnel department, to look at the city adopting permanent Zoom meetings for council committee meetings, commission and board meetings. Again, this is a request. It doesn't mean it will happen or what will come of it. I think my recollection was it was a 60 or 90 day report back. But again, his focus on that was, addressing the various green issues that he supports and trying to limit, the use of vehicles to come to meetings and making it more accessible to the public. But again, I don't know where that will go, but that would be the only other item that I would that I'm aware of related to this.
And let me just comment, because I personally would like for us to be able to start meeting in person when it makes sense. And so I have spent some time with staff looking into what the status of things are, possible options, and so on. And just for anyone listening in and for the commissioners, the motion made by Paul Koretz on December 9, 2022, I'm looking at it right now, moved the council direct the chief legislative analyst and the city administrative office to report back to 60 days on the impact of all city departments ceasing travel to conferences. And then it included the feasibility of having all city departments cease daily automobile travel to meetings to the extent possible, and that all meetings go forward to be accomplished via video conferencing, including council committees, city commissions, and other meetings. It doesn't specifically mention city council at large meetings. And then there was a further motion for the personnel department to report back in 60 days on the impact of such a change on remote work by city staff and so forth. But the framework of the motion is all carbon footprint. So the things that have stuck in my mind is, I think personally, there's a lot to be said about the public having the ability to do public comment virtually, having the public come to a meeting in person, as much as we may like to see people in person, is a very significant hardship, whatever time of the day we meet, let alone if we're meeting in City Hall, for example, as this commission did in the past. And so I take that to heart. And at the moment, our understanding, and we just had that confirmed for the moment from Mr. Tristan, is that where this commission would have a meeting room on the 10th floor in a city council committee hearing room, for whatever reason, we are not aware of any telecommunication infrastructure put in yet, which would allow someone from the public to call in like they can right now. And then there's other issues of, I'm not sure if, and somebody will correct me if there's a change in this, if those committee rooms are open to commissions if we were to meet in City Hall at this time, which is a issue out of our control. And that does leave open, we could find an alternative place to meet that's off-site in theory, but there's logistic issues of staff, having the room properly set up and so forth, that we had a hearing room somewhere else. And so with that, let me just open up the discussion, because I know this is an important issue for everybody.
Commissioner LeBeau here. David, would you mind, just because some of us on the commission, this predates our time. So prior to COVID, what were the Ethics Commission meetings looking like, and how was the public comment structured prior to COVID in City Hall? What did that look like?
So yes, our meetings were in City Hall in the 10th floor. There's much smaller conference rooms, and the public would show up in public and provide public comment during each item. That's in essence short. There was no option for, you know, anyone, even pre-COVID, to be able to call in and make public comment. Everything is done in person.
I guess what I was wondering to follow up on that is how many individuals were able to attend. Do we see a difference in the level of participation? Certainly that would be important to me if it were extremely limited pre-COVID because of those in-person requirements as opposed to accessibility through Zoom and online. Of course, that would make quite a bit of difference.
I think it was limited. Limited in terms of historically what we've had. And that was one of the things that we continually heard, the challenge of people, not just to speak in person, but also to be able to move our regular participants' ability to move from participating at a county meeting to a city council meeting to another council committee or commission meeting that's going on, and then come to our commission meeting. That's the challenge that we've heard. I think, again, in my experience just over this COVID period, there absolutely has been more participation by the public via phone calls. I think the accessibility is easier for them, the convenience is easier for them. But as I mentioned, even individuals that regularly participate currently in person in other meetings, I think they're able to, while they're queuing up to speak, whether it be at public council or at the county, can be calling in and making a public comment at our office. So I do believe that the call-in option is something that that the public has I think enjoyed, because it's much easier for them. But I absolutely also understand, you know, the concern that we've had in terms of us meeting as in person and interacting with each other in person versus just seeing each other on a screen.
Any other questions or discussion?
David, is that room that you guys used prior to COVID, is that available and something that can be used? I mean, I'm asking for a logistical issue. Okay, there is.
Yes,
okay.
The rooms are all available. They're open. If we were to move to in-person meetings, you know, what it would mean is we would use those same rooms and people would show up in public to speak. They just would not be able to call in.
Just one point, things are a little bit different at the moment in that the city currently still has requirements to access city facilities in terms of proving recent testing for COVID or vaccination.
And right now there's a check-ins. I know I have not personally experienced at City Hall, but are taking longer than normal for a multitude of reasons. Is that correct?
Correct. The public that comes in is currently required. Oh, and employees also to prove that they have taken a COVID test or the vaccine. And remind me, Renee, my recollection is the mask requirement. I know in terms of that's changed back and forth. I don't know if it's mandatory at this point anymore or if it's just strongly encouraged, the indoor mask mandate, but the other two items do still remain in place. The other two items being vaccine or test within the last 48 hours, a negative test.
I'm not certain about the mask requirement as a general matter in City Hall. I'm more familiar about what the mask requirement is in my office, which is required.
I will share with the commissioners that I have explored, because it relates to this issue, is there a possibility of us having some type of quote-unquote retreat, which would be an open meeting to the public, where we could meet somewhere outside of a hearing office room and have an open meeting for us to be able to at least in person meet and do the functions of a retreat. And I've been advised of similar difficulties of, at the moment at least, of doing that based on some city requirements that are made. I will note that I've been in recently, as at the Harbor Administration building with in their hearing room, and I was not aware of, it wasn't for a hearing of the commissioners, their the Harbor Board, but it was in their facility making use of it, and I wasn't aware of anyone checking vaccination to enter the building. You had to go through security, which is fairly like an airport, and you also had to sit here and show ID and so forth. But no masks, no vaccination evidence, and that was just a month ago. And we visit this issue every time we have one of these meetings, whether they're special. Can we only meet every other month right now, versus on our agenda of a regular meeting? Commissioner Kulkarni, were you going
to
say something?
Yeah, is this an appropriate time to share our feedback?
An open discussion, any questions?
So I continue to have reservations about meeting in person without opportunities for individuals to call in or Zoom in. It's extremely difficult for community members to access City Hall. I find it difficult for myself to access City Hall, go through the trouble of parking, the expense, making it, to the building from the parking, et cetera, given my schedule. But I think for community members, especially at this time, we have seen that our city is experiencing a number of challenges right now, and city government is. And I understand that, some of it will involve our commission moving forward. And so if we want open, honest dialogue and full participation as we can get from community members, my recommendation would be to hold off on in-person meetings until such time as we can locate a venue that allows for phone-in or Zoom-in options. I absolutely agree that it would be wonderful to have in-person meetings for those of us on the commission and the staff, but I think that without giving individuals an opportunity to phone in, that is community members, to me, that's untenable.
Commissioner LeBeau here. David, may I ask a question, just a logistics question? Is there, whatever mechanism we're using with Zoom right now to allow for the increase in public comment, is there no way to have a computer or some sort of technology set up in a simple, easy way in the room that you guys for decades have had the Ethics Commission meetings in? Meaning,
well,
if we showed up in person, like, there's no way to just replicate this same technology over Zoom for public comment that we're using now?
to my knowledge, and I can double check this, there is no access to that in those rooms. There's no available Wi-Fi for us to set up, so we would probably have to request that ITA hardwire those rooms with a line to be able to access that. But again, we don't control those rooms. Those are actually council controlled rooms. And while we historically have used them and it has been part of our schedule to use them, there have been times in our history that we have been bounced and have had to move our meeting because council had a conflict with it. But I can absolutely check to see what options exist for us to do something like that. What it would mean is, assuming that we could do that, it would be, you know, a laptop set up there where people would call in. I'm not sure how well the speakers in there would pick up the comments from the public that would come in through a laptop, and then, you know, the public could hear. But it would be those kinds of logistic issues. But like I said, I'd be more than glad to take a look at that and reach out to General Services and ITA and see what they can do. It might be something that, if it is doable, we would have to pay for out of our budget, since it's not, like I said, not something that whoever controls the rooms would be wanting to pay out of their budget. But we'd be more than glad to take a look at it.
I mean, maybe the recommendation is for February's meeting that we continue on the virtual, and then maybe that's some sort of note that you can send us or something like that to try to see, you know, if there's a way to marry both ideas, right? To go back to in person and have the camaraderie and working together, but to also allow for the very important notion of public comment. Is that something that is doable, or other commissioners, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I'm sorry, one comment. The matter before you is just to continue the option for teleconferencing for 1 month. And so before our February meeting, there will need to be another approval to do that. In the meantime, you know, there could be changes that impact our ability to continue to teleconference, but I can't say for sure right now.
Yeah. So as you've noticed, Commissioner LeBeau, we will probably need to have a special meeting, or want to meet virtually, for February and January. And we've been having those regularly. They're very short meetings because it's all we do. And we typically don't get public comment, interestingly enough, which may or may not be a sign of public comment view on meeting virtually. Don't know that for a fact, other than I'll make the observation that we haven't had people asking us to meet in person that I'm aware of. I've been a city commissioner for 2003 on a number of commissions, and people come and make public comment, but it is, as I think it was Commissioner Davis noted, and we're all aware, it's a really difficult thing for people to be able to take off time from work, deal with logistics of parking, getting access, and showing up. And I'm always amazed that people are so dedicated to do so, because there's a lot of hurdles in doing that for a person who otherwise is, you know, they're just a member of the public and they're have a home life, working, whatever they may be doing. It's not professionally being at our hearing or somebody else's hearing. And so this is something I personally have been trying to monitor on a personal level, just to find out what others or commissions are doing and what options we may have, because I personally would love to have us be hybrid if we had the option. That's where we are. I have used for other commissions at times the committee hearing rooms, not obviously on the Ethics Commission, because my time in the Ethics Commission is only during the pandemic, and they work fine, but they got microphones and set up. I don't know if things have changed for a non-hybrid meeting, and I David's point of how well that would really work if we were to sort of just try to, you know, do it with a laptop or something, is a very good question, and probably fraught with all types of, things that go wrong type of likelihoods in my own personal view. But we can review this, and we'll be reviewing this pretty regularly, because that's what we need to do if we're going to not meet in person. Anyone else have any discussion, questions? I mean, you know, it's a very important issue for us. And I will continue to try to explore the possibility, which I could figure out how to do it, I will bring it up and we get to see as a commission if we were interested in doing it, the idea of doing some type of quote-unquote retreat to sort of at least have an in-person meeting of us in a non-normal regular meeting. But that's neither here nor there for today. Anything else for the item today on our agenda? Okay. At this time, is there anyone who would like to make a motion to adopt the recommended determination? Without a motion, we'll be without any determinations to proceed virtually. So,
move to accept the recommendation.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Davis moves to adopt the recommended determination. Is there a second on that motion?
Commissioner LeBeau, I will second that motion.
Great. Commissioner LeBeau seconds. Any further discussion on the motion before we turn to a roll call? Hearing none. Mr. Eusebio, can you please call the roll on the motion to adopt the findings pursuant to AB 361?
Yes. This vote is on the motion to approve continuation of teleconference meetings pursuant to AB 361. When your name is called, please state your name for the record and either yes in favor of the motion or no in opposition to the motion. President Darr.
Commissioner Darr, yes.
Commissioner Davis.
Commissioner Davis, yes.
Vice President Kulkarni.
Commissioner Kulkarni, yes.
And Commissioner LeBeau.
Commissioner LeBeau, yes.
We have 4 yes votes and the motion is approved.
Thank you. That concludes our action items for today. So we're going to now move to the information items on our agenda. I will take a personal just to note for anyone who's been paying attention that in the semifinal game, France a little while ago beat Morocco. So it's France versus Argentina for the finals. That's my indulgence. Let's proceed with item 12, our information items. We have a review of recusals by Jenna Hornstock, a member of the City Planning Commissioner. Tyler Joseph is our policy director. And Mr. Joseph, would you please summarize the recusal review for us? Good to see you.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Tyler Joseph. I'm the policy director with the Ethics Commission. And as President Darr mentioned, this is item 12, a review of recusals by Jenna Hornstock. So this is an informational recusal item, which we haven't done in a little while. So for the public, what that means is that the member of a board or commission who files 3 or more recusal review notices with us during a 365-day period, but those recusals were not directly related to the same financial conflict of interest. So the Ethics Commission does not need to take any official action on this. We've had these cases in the past. It's been a little while, but in this particular case, with Ms. Hornstock, there were only 3 recusals. These were all done out of caution, and 2 of them were a result of a personal friendship that her son has with the son of a person who was a party to a land use application that was before the commission. And again, the Ethics Commission does not need to take any action on this item. It's purely informational. So that's actually all that there is to this particular item. We're ending the year on an easy one. And we're also ending fully caught up on recusal reviews. So we do these on a rolling basis as they come in, and we'll continue to do that as they arise next year. But as of right now, we are ending fully caught up. So if anyone has any questions on this, I'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Joseph. Does anyone have any questions or? Hearing none, let's turn to our next informational item, item 13, an election update. Blanca Pereira is our campaign program manager. Would you please summarize the election update for us? And welcome. Good to see you.
Hello, President Darr. Good afternoon, commissioners. Item 13 is an update on the regular 2022 city and LA USD elections, the special 2023 city Council District 6 election, and the regular 2024 City and LA USD elections. The 2022 general election took place on November 8th. The winning candidates are listed on page 2 of the report. To date, candidates in the general election have reported receiving nearly $67 million in contributions and making expenditures exceeding $74 million.
The next filing deadline is January 31st, 2023, and it will cover activity from November 3rd through the end of the year. 12 of the 14 candidates in the general election were matching funds participants. To date, we have distributed over $4 million to the candidates in the general election. The candidates have until February 8th, 2023 to claim funds. The general election candidates also filed 1,520 communications to date and over $20.7 million in independent expenditures have been reported. There were also three measures on the general election ballot. Two of the measures passed and one failed. Three committees were also formed to support or oppose these measures. They have reported over $9 million in contributions and making expenditures over $9 million as well. The next filing deadline is January 31st and will cover activity from November 3rd through the end of the year. Next, a special election will be held to fill the vacancy in Council District 6. The fundraising window opened on November 2nd. The primary election will be held on April 4th, 2023, and the special general, if one is necessary, will be held on June 27th. Candidate filing week for this special election took place December 5th to December 12th. 19 candidates filed the necessary paperwork with our office to begin fundraising and the necessary paperwork to qualify to appear on the ballot with the city clerk's office. Of the 19 candidates who filed, 17 accepted to participate in the matching funds program. To date, 7 campaign communications have been filed and no independent expenditure communications have been reported. The first filing deadline for candidates in the special 2023 election is January 31st, and it will cover activity through December 31st of this year. Additionally, the 2024 City and LAUSD election fundraising window is open. To date, we have 6 candidates that have filed the necessary paperwork to begin fundraising. The first filing deadline for candidates in the 2024 election is January 31st, and it will also cover activity through December 31st. This concludes my item. I am more than happy to answer any questions you may have, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. And you guys have been very busy. anyone have any questions? Hearing none. And thank you again. Let's turn to item 14 on our informational items. This is a quarterly lobbying summary for the third quarter of 2022. We're going to hear from Ms. Asimud Farr, as our lobbying program manager. Would you please summarize this item for us?
Good afternoon, commissioners. I will actually be presenting the item today for Kiana. My name is IOGJ Hospitalis, and I am the lobbying program analyst reporting on the Q3 2022 lobbying summary. In Q3, lobbying firms registered in the city reported $18.9 million in payments from clients to firms for lobbying-related projects. This is a slight increase from the payments reported earlier this year in Q2. The top 10 highest paid firms continue to make up around 40% of all reported payments during the quarter. 9 of the top 10 firms were part of the top 10 highest paid firms last quarter. This quarter's top 10 firms are also the same top 10 as Q3 of last year, just in a different order. Over the course of Q3, lobbying entities reported roughly $263,000 fundraised, $30,000 in direct contributions, and $71,000 in delivered contributions. As far as trends in Q2, we saw an increase in these activities compared to Q1. And this quarter in Q3, we saw that increased trend continue for fundraising and May contributions. However, there was a decrease in contributions delivered. Lastly, 5 major fires reported spending about $542,997 in Q3. This marks a nearly tenfold increase in major fire spending since last quarter and the highest amount spent any quarter over the last year. That concludes my summary. I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Appreciate your stepping up and presenting today for us. Are there any questions? Hearing none, let's see, we're ready to proceed to item 15. That's going to be our recusal summary for the third quarter of 2022. And we have Samantha Rodriguez. Good to see you. And would you, Ms. Rodriguez, please summarize this item for us today?
Yes, thank you, President Darr. Item 15 before you presents the summary of the board and commission members who reported recusing themselves during the third quarter of 2022. During this third quarter period, there were a total of two recusals reported. These recusals affected two of the city's total 275 boards and commissions, but there were no new reviews that were triggered by the recusals filed by in this quarter. The details of the summary are included in your binders, but if you have any specific questions or concerns about these about this item, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you again. Let's proceed to item 16, which is pre-confirmation statements of economic interests, SEIs. Mm-hmm. And on this, can you please also summarize, Ms. Rodriguez?
Yes. Item 16 before you is a summary of the pre-confirmation statements of economic interests transmitted by the Ethics Commission to City Council for approval since our last commission meeting. Since our last commission meeting, during the October 2022 and November 2022 period, there were a total of six nominees whose pre-confirmation SEIs were transmitted by us to City Council. All six of these transmittals were for new appointments. The details of these transmittals are in your binders, but if you have any additional questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you again. Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. I think we're done with you now. So thank you for us on both these items. So thank you again.
Elizabeth,
thank you. Turn to item 17 on our agenda, the policy and legislation update. And we're going to welcome back Mr. Tyler Joseph. And would you please summarize, Mr. Joseph?
All right. Thank you. So item 17, the policy update, I would start with last Thursday. The city's new ad hoc committee on governance reform held its first meeting. And at that meeting, the committee took up the two different transmittals that this commission had approved previously, both involving technical amendments to the campaign finance ordinance. Both of those items were approved by the committee, so now they're moving on to full council. We'll certainly keep you up to date on when that's heard in council. Our municipal lobbying ordinance is still in the rules committee. We anticipate that next year, fingers crossed, this will be the time that it gets taken up, keeping in mind that the newly seated elected officials are currently in the process of staffing up and getting organized. We are optimistic about the early movement on this ad hoc committee on governance reform, so we're hoping that that and the other items, as David mentioned and as was discussed earlier, the charter item are heard next year. So we're keeping an eye on all of that stuff. We're hoping that the movement kicks off early. We've been in contact with multiple council offices, staying up to date, and we will have an update for you as soon as we have something new on those fronts. But until then, thank you for everything this year. I really appreciate all the work, and I know it's been a busy one, and it'll be busy again next year. So we'll keep moving forward and keeping you up to date on whatever's next.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Joseph. Anyone have any questions? Hearing none, we'll turn to item 18, our executive director's report, Mr. Tristan.
That came up quicker than I thought. Okay. Executive director's report. Commissioners, I am happy to announce that we've filled our last vacant position. Christopher Martyr. Chris is what he's just joined us. So Chris will be working in our communications team, and he will be working on data visualization and data analysis. He comes from us prior to with working with ESRI, the San Bernardino Transportation Authority, and the City of Long Beach. He is a graduate of UCLA with a master's degree in geodata infrastructure. So Chris, you want to say a few words?
Not much to say myself, just thank you very much for the opportunity to work for the commission, and I'm looking forward to serving the public through my role. So thank you very much, and nice to meet you all.
Thank you. Welcome aboard.
Thanks.
I also wanted to mention, commissioners, our budget request. Our budget request was due this year on the November 18th to the CAO. It was a different request that we've made in our past history. We really wanted to make
this year's request, one that reflected the true needs of the agency in order to address the longstanding shortfall that we've had in terms of staff. We are historically, you know, what we have done is shift resources continually to address the shortfall. And no year did we feel that any greater than this year. The amount of work related to the elections, to matching funds, enforcement, just has a tremendous impact. And while we've always been team players and been willing to work with the city to address our needs, I think this is a time for us to really make a step forward and set a path for the right sizing of the agency. We currently have 37 positions and a budget of $4.6 million. I submitted a request of adding 22 additional staff members and a budget of $7.2 million. Again, I think given the time that we're in and the work that we do, it is extremely critical for the council and the mayor to hear what we need in order to do the work that is mandated of us. Just to give you some context, at any point throughout this election cycle, we had over 20 of our 37 staff members working on matching funds. We processed over 29,000 contributions within that four-day time frame. And so what that does to us is it, in essence, delays the critical work that has to be done in other areas, especially on the audit side, since the audit team is the one that is heavily tasked with the reviews, but it's all hands on deck in order for us to meet the need of providing the funding to candidates, which is critical to them. And when I say all hands on deck, I mean that includes myself, that includes Heather, because it is critical for us to provide the candidates with that money soon. As one of the earlier commenters made, that, you know, this, the changes to the program have really allowed additional not just participation, but qualification and substantial influx of money to those candidates. So for that program to succeed, we have to provide the resources in order for the candidates to receive that funding. So that's critical. So I did want to mention that, that again, our ask is going to be a big one, but I feel that it's necessary at this point in time for us to take that big step forward, and I will continue to fill you in and update you as we move this process along. I hope to meet with our incoming mayor and have a conversation about these issues. While some of these subjects we proposed as part of charter changes with, for example, a baseline committee, a commission budget, I think it's important that you know we address those now. We don't need a charter amendment to increase our budget. Like I said, I will be working extremely hard to try to right-size us in order to be able to do a lot of the critical work. And finally, I would just like to add in terms of you know this year and the work. Having been here the number of years that I have, this is without a doubt was the busiest, most work-intensive year that we've ever had. We annually have a range of 20 to 25,000 filings. We'll probably go over 30,000 by the end of this year. As I mentioned, in terms of the number of matching funds checks that were processed, we're also near 30,000 in the number of compliance contacts that we have, and that's by phone, in person, email. So the work it doesn't, as Tyler mentioned, it only continues, and given the possible discussions of expansion of the council, of possible involvement by our agency in the districting commission, and other areas like the lobbying ordinance and other proposals, the work will continue. But I want to really thank the staff for their hard work and commitment this year. It was not an easy year, but they do it with a smile, and they do it knowing how critical that work is for us. I also want to thank Renee for her support of our agency throughout the year. I know Renee doesn't work for our office. She works for the city attorney, but really she's a staff member in our eyes because she does play a critical role and are continuing to have conversations with us on how to address the critical issues that come up. And finally, I want to thank you, the commissioners, because, you really sit at the table of all these issues and deal with these, in a much more public venue than we have to sometimes. And so I really appreciate all the work and effort that you do as volunteers for the city. So with that, I would that's all I had. I'd be more than glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, David. Any questions?
Commissioner LeBeau here. Not a question, but just a heartfelt thank you to the entire staff, David, Heather, Renee, you know, you guys are all amazing and have worked really hard, and we just appreciate you and all the commissioners. I think I can speak on everyone's behalf. We're grateful for your amazing staff and hard work as we close out the year.
You're
If I may piggyback on that, I just wanted to express my gratitude, David, to you, Heather, Renee, and the entire staff. The work that you do is so critical to ensuring really the proper operations of our city government, right? To make sure that we have the trust of our citizenry. And so, onward and upward into 2023, and hopefully we continue to maintain the high level of work and the commitment we all have to this great city.
I have a question for you, David, if I may.
Yes.
Maybe other questions from others. I noticed on the two audit reports on connecting with the Nuri Martinez accounts that Nuri Martinez was the committee's treasurer on both items. In that context, is that common that the candidates themselves are the actual listed treasurer versus you know, some other individual as the treasurer?
It is much more common, President Dar. It wasn't the case prior. Typically, you would have a treasurer sign on as the official treasurer. It's become more common over the past several years, mainly because treasurers have decided not to take on the responsibility of any you know, potential issues that arise out of an audit or of an enforcement case. And realistically, more importantly, they don't want to be named. They take on committees and require the candidates to take on the responsibility of that issue. And since you mentioned, you know, this particular audit, I know there were comments initially related to the return of the money. Part of our curing policy that we had established for many years allows the committees to cure contributions. And I did want to clarify, it sounded like there might have been some confusion about the process. The curing happens by the committee on its own. These weren't findings where we discovered these and asked the committee to return the money. The committee received the contributions, discovered that they had received a contribution above the limits, and returned it within the period of the campaign. So I just wanted to clarify that in case there was any confusion over that.
Yeah, so I was going to ask about that just to make sure there was, I'm not sure if anyone had that wrong, but it was hard to tell for sure the way things were said. So the curing of contributions where somebody made more than the maximum limit contribution or, you know, deemed to be from the same source, that type of thing, those are all done during the campaign. This is not a curing as part of an audit. Is that correct?
Correct. The policy that we have in place allows the committees to, but the policy also states that we will, as part of curing, there is no enforcement, but in order to have disclosure, we include it as part of the audit so the public is aware that this curing occurred. So it's a disclosure component of the policy.
All right, because if everything is working, the excess donations were reported, and then later during the campaign, not during an audit, were resolved if they were resolved by the campaign as shown in these two. Audit.
That's correct.
Okay. Just to make sure no one's confused by what they say. All right. Any other questions?
I would just again add my thanks to David and Heather and the staff, Renee. It's an amazing amount of work that was accomplished this year. And I think the fact that we are being brought in to discussion about some of the things that have languished for years is a reflection on the confidence that folks have in this commission and the staff in particular in in your abilities to meet some challenges that have been put forward. So, and I think this year is an ample demonstration that you're ready for the tasks ahead and looking forward to helping to move the city along in this questionable period of crisis. So thank you for that.
Okay, any other questions on our last of our informational items today, item 18? Hearing none, let's turn to our closing items. We're on item 19. This is an opportunity for commissioners to make announcements or requests for future agendas. Anyone want to take this opportunity? Hearing none, we'll turn to item 20, everyone's favorite item, I think, and that's adjournment. This will hereby conclude our meeting at approximately 1:50 p.m. Thank you to my fellow commissioners, the staff, and the public for your input and participation today. This meeting is adjourned. It's 1:50 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, commissioners, for another great year.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Thank you, everyone. The meeting has been adjourned.
Goodbye.